We're holding on Kofches Amud Bey's the last line by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hamagadah she'isha v'hechzira." If a man divorced his wife and then he remarried her, muteras liyavam. Later on, if he dies without children, then she is mutter to his brother. She's mutter to his brother for you. Now, if their divorce had remained final, then of course she'd be usher to his brother because she'd be his wife, she'd be his brother's wife, where there's no mitzvah of yibum, and it would be usher. But now that he remarried her, then that undoes the effect of the previous get and makes it that then, so she was married at the time that her husband died, therefore she's available for yibum. But Rabbi Lazar oyser, but Rabbi Lazar says it would be usher for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. Similarly, if a man divorces a yisoma, an orphan girl who, as we've been talking about throughout the parak, was married with a marriage that's valid only to Rabbanan, so he divorced her from that, and then he remarried her, and that doesn't matter when he remarried her, whether she's still a tana or whether she's already a gdola, also materas liyavim, then also she'd be mutter to do yibum for the same reason, because when he died, then she was his wife. But again, Rabbi Elazar Oyser, Rabbi Elazar here also says that it's also, again, as we'll see in the Gemara, why. Now, on the other hand, Ketana, she's Sia Avia, but if the Ketana was married off by her father, where then it's a marriage that's valid, Daraisa, then it's Gaushet, and then she's divorced, Rashi uses the expression that her father received the get on her behalf. Actually, that's not so simple. And Agoy Sabach and Guri Nashas both refer to various places where it seems to imply that she receives her get on her own behalf. But anyway, the point is that if she was divorced while her father was still alive and while she's still a ktana, then she's considered ki yisoma b'chaye av. At that point, she's considered in halacha like an orphan, even though her father is alive, meaning that if he wants to get remarried then to somebody else, that is, then she accepts the kedushin on her own behalf. Her father doesn't have the power to do that anymore. Anyway, so this girl was divorced, and now she's a yisayim b'chaye av, v'hechzira. Now her husband remarried her as a ktana, her original husband remarried her as a ktana, divrei hakol asura l'yavam, then everybody would agree that she would be also for the yavam if the husband died while she's still a ktana. Because what happens, let's consider, the original kiddushin was fully valid on a daraisa level. The original gerushin were fully valid on a daraisa level because a ketana you're able to divorce. On the other hand, the remarriage is valid only derabbanan because daraisa, the only marriage that's valid for a ketana is when her father accepts the kedushin, and here you don't have that. Here she's accepting her own kedushin because her father's out of the picture. Therefore, in effect, what you have is that she's divorced on a daraisa level, and therefore the husband's brother is also to marry her. They're married only on a derabbanan level, and therefore, so she's also to him in yibum. So in effect, she's considered on a daraisa level as though she's still divorced from his brother when his brother died, and therefore that no yibum is possible. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Omar Eifa, which is the name of a chacham, says my time in the Rabbi Elazar. The reason why Rabbi Elazar says in the first two cases of our Mishnah that she'd be also for yibum is because there was a period of time during the marriage during the husband's lifetime, rather, when she was also to the brother. In other words, let's consider the first case, for example, or both cases, really. They pretty much amount to the same thing. The difference is that in the first case, the marriage was daraisa, and in the second case, it was only derabanan. Either way, the point is that when she was married to Reuven and divorced from him. Now, the moment that Reuven divorced her, she becomes also to his brother forever, because if it remains that way, if Reuven were to die at that point, everybody agrees that she'd be also to his brother Shimon, because she's his brother's grusha, and there's no yibum. Now we're saying that Reuven remarries her, but Rabbi Elazar says it doesn't matter. The fact is, at one point, she was also to the brother, therefore she remains also to him. But the other chachamim ask Eifa, yichochi chalitza nami leitzibai. By that logic, she shouldn't require chalitza either. In the same way as, for example, throughout the Masechta, we've been talking about cases where a woman is also to the brother on a Daraisa level, for example, because she's an Erva to him. And we say that not only she can't do Yibum, she also doesn't require Chalitza. Why is, over here, we're saying she can't do Yibum. We don't seem to be saying that she can't do Chalitza, that she doesn't need to do Chalitza. V'chitema hochi nami. So you might say, maybe, the Mishnah doesn't say one way or the other. Maybe it means, maybe Rav Elazar would say that she's not only can't do Yibum, but she's potter from Chalitza. But no, v'hatanya, but we learn in a braisa. Mishum Rav Elazar amru chalitzas. They said in the name of Rav Elazar that she has to do Chalitza. So even Rav Elazar agrees that she has to do Chalitza. Now, why is that? If it's a matter of that she was osir to the brother, then it should be like any other case of an isur daraisa, and no Yibum or Chalitza should be necessary. Ela, ama efer, Rav Elazar la yadayin, my timer. So Efer says, you know what, you're right. I don't know what Rav Elazar's reason is. Given that it's not just because Omdal of Shah Achas Be'isr, there must be another reason. I don't know what it is. Omar Abaya, Hainu time of the Rav Elazar. So Abaya says, I'll tell you Rav Elazar's reason. It's not that he knows for sure that because Omdal of Shah Achas Be'isr, Misapdalei, he misses my palace in Yisun Oshonim Apil. He has a suffix. What is it that triggers the requirement for Yibum? Is it, do we look at Misa Mapelas, that when the husband dies, that's what makes her fall to Yibum? Well, in that case, at the time of his death, she was married to him. Or whether we have to look at the entire life cycle of that first marriage. So in Misa Mapelas, if you say you go just according to the death of the husband, Haram Yakamele Yibum. Good, well, then she's up for Yibum to Shimon, because after all, at the time when Reuven died, she was married to him. But if you say that we have to look at the entire first marriage, Ha'omdol of Shah Hasbeser, then the fact is there was a period of time during that marriage when she became also to him, namely when he divorced her. And therefore, because it's a suffix, as usual, as we've had throughout the Masechta, when there's a suffix, then you need chalitza, but Yibum is not possible. So that would explain Rav Elazar's shita. Rava Amar, Rava says a different answer. La'olam pshita l'Rav Elazar de misa mapelas. No, it's not. Rav Elazar knows for a fact that misa mapelas. We don't have to look at the whole life of the previous marriage. All we have to do is focus on what was her status when her husband died, and when her husband died, she was married to him. Umihu, but the reason why Rav Elazar requires and says that you can't do yibum is because of gzeira derabanan hakol b'kiyin b'gerushin ve'en hakol b'kiyin b'chazara. Everybody knows that she was divorced, because when there's divorce, then there's a coil for it. But not everybody knows that she's remarried, because remarriages, when a couple remarries, it's not always done with so much fanfare. So therefore, and as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, on the next line, eventually, if they stay married for a long time, eventually there'll be a coil for it. But conceivably, they could remarry and he dies very shortly after that. So therefore, so people will know about the Gedushin, they won't know about the remarriage, and people are going to mistakenly think that you can do Yibum with a woman who was divorced from your brother. And therefore, as a Gzeira Dirabanan, as a precaution, we tell him not to do Yibum, but nevertheless, since it's only a Gzeira Dirabanan, then as usual, throughout the Masechta, when Yibum is blocked, only Dirabanan, you still have a zikah daraisa, therefore you need chalitza. The Gemara says, Adrama, chazara kibin liyas v'tursei islei kola. What do you mean? On the contrary, there's more of a coil for the fact that she's living with him. So people are going to know that they are remarried. And the answer is no, because mila eskin and dahadra ba'urta v'shachar b'tzafra. Because not necessarily, you could just as well have it could conceivably happen that he remarries her in the evening and he passes away the next morning. So nobody has gotten used to the idea that they're back together and living together, and therefore some people are going to know that he divorced her because Gedushin has a curl. They're not going to know that he remarried her because the remarriage was so short, and therefore there'd be the concern that people are going to think you can do Yibum with a brother's divorced wife. Okay, so far we have two reasons. So far we have three reasons, one of which we schlugged up, of Rav Elazar's shita. Efer had said that it's an Isur Daraisa, but in that case, then you shouldn't need Chalitza either. Abaya had said it's Rabbi Elazar has a suffix, and Rava says it's a Gzeira de Rabbanan because people may not know that they remarried. Rav Ashi says another point. Hainu Taima de Rabbi Elazar. The reason for Rabbi Elazar's shita is the Gozer Hani Mishkim Yisema B'chaya Avach Zera, because he makes a Zera on the first two cases of the Mishnah because of the concern that it might be confused with the third case in the Mishnah, which the third case was, we said, that the girl was originally married Daraisa, by that her father accepted the Kedushin on her behalf, and divorced Daraisa, and now remarried only on a Derabbanan level, because now she's a Yisayma B'chaya Av, and we said in the Mishnah that everybody agrees she'd be also to do Yibum, because her new marriage is only Derabbanan, on a Daraisa level, she's still a divorcee. So therefore, so Rav Ashi says, we have to make a Gzeira that the first two cases in the Mishnah, where she was originally married, in the first case of the Mishnah, where her original marriage and her divorce and her remarriage are all Daraisa, and the second case of the Mishnah, where they're all Derabbanan, we have to make that Gzeira because of the third case in the Mishnah, where the original marriage and divorce are Daraisa, and the second marriage is only Derabbanan. And the Gemara says, Hachi Nami Mistabra. In fact, it's logical to say that Rav Ashi's reason explained, in fact, is the correct explanation of Rabbi Elazar's Shita. Midikatani Sefer, because the Sefer talks about that exact case. Ketana Shisiyah Aviyah V'Nisgarisha Ki Yisayim V'Chaya Ad V'Echzira D'Vehakal Sh'Asur V'Yavam. Now, you have to ask yourself, Hai Maila Memra, why would the Mishnah even have to tell us that? Pshita, wouldn't it be quite obvious? We understand that her remarriage is not valid on Daraisa level, it exists only Drabbanan, as opposed to her original marriage and her original divorce were on a Daraisa level. So the Mishnah wouldn't even have a reason to say it. Ela lav hokamash malan. So it must be that the Mishnah is telling us, Taima de Rabbi Elazar, de Gozer Hanach Mishum Hai. The third clause of the Mishnah is not really needed legufoi, because we know the din is very obvious. It's telling us the reason why Rabbi Elazar is machmir in the first two cases of the Mishnah is because of the concern of confusing it with that third case where everybody would agree that it's also. So all it is the Tanakama holds there's no reason to make such a gzeira. Sure, in the third case, it would be osur for her to do yibum, no question about it, but there's no reason to be gozer for that because of that, about the first two cases where the marriage, divorce, and remarriage are all Daraisa, or the second case where they're all Derabbanan. And Rabbi Elazar finds that they're not concerned about, you might confuse those with the case where the marriage and divorce were Daraisa and the remarriage is Derabbanan. And Rabbi Elazar finds reason to be concerned about that. So Shmamina, good, that proves that is in fact Rabbi Elazar's reason. And Tanya Kavasei de Rav Ashi, and we learn a Braisa also, like Rav Ashi's explanation, where a Braisa says, Modim Chachamim la Rabbi Elazar, Biktana Shisiya Aviv Neskarsha. The Chachamim agree with Rabbi Elazar. When a Ketana was married, Shisiya Aviv Neskarsha, where her father married her off, and then she was divorced, which so far that was all Daraisa. Now at this point, she's considered like an orphan, even though her father is alive. So now, if her husband remarries her, which is only valid Derabbanan, because Daraisa for Ketana, only her father can accept Kedushin on her behalf. And here the father doesn't have the koyach to do that anymore. So then, therefore, Shasur al Yavam. So the Chachamim would agree that she's also to the Yavam, but Nesha Gerusheho, Gerushin Gmurim, because the Gerushin was a fully valid Gerushin. Because after all, the marriage was Daraisa, so is the divorce. But in Chazarasa, Chazara Gmura, on the other hand, her return to her husband is incomplete because it's only Derabban. Bamed Vonim Amurim. Now the Braisa. Now the Braisa goes on to say, when is that talking about? If he divorced her and remarried her all while she's a Ketana, then we would say, because then, so again, the problem is that the new Kiddushin are only Dirabon, and the Gerushin, meanwhile, were Daraisa, so therefore it means on a Daraisa level, she's still a Grusha, and therefore the brother would be also to marry her. Avo Girsha Shiktana, but if the husband divorced her when she was a Ktana, and then he remarried her after she became a Gdola, well, then that marriage is valid on a Daraisa level again, because she's a Gdola. Or another possibility could be he remarried her while she was still a Tana, but then she grew up by him. And then they have Bia, for they have Bia at one point after she becomes a Gdola. Then that Bia itself constitutes a valid Kedushin on a Daraisa level. Umes, and then he dies. Then then we say that she can do chalitza or yibum, because in either of those cases, the remarriage is in fact daraisa. Either the remarriage was done after she's a gdola, and then there's for sure no issue, or the remarriage was done when she was a ktana, but then it turns into a marriage daraisa when they have relations for the first time after she becomes a gdola. And then the braisa finishes off. Then they said in the name of Rabbi Lazar that even in that case, she would need to do chalitza, not yibum. So how does this prove? How does this prove Rav Ashi's explanation of Rabbi Lazar is, since the braisa starts by saying, it means that Rabbi Lazar is basing himself on that. On that case, and he's saying we have to extend from that case to the other similar cases, and aser yibum in those cases as well. Whereas the chachamim disagree, so they're saying we agree with you on the actual case of yisoyim v'chayav. We would just distinguish within that itself between when the remarriage took place, whether the remarriage itself may be on a daraisa level. And he would say that no, once we say that it's also in the case of yisoyim v'chayav when they were remarried as a ktana and he died. When she's still a ktana, then we have to extend it to all the other ones. So we see that bears out Rav Ashi's point, that is why Rav Elazar says it's also in all these cases in the first place, because of the possibility of confusing one with the other. So not because of Eifa's reason of Omda Olav Shachas Bisora, and not Rav's reason of that Rav Elazar has a suffix. Not a biased reason because of a suffix, not Rava's reason because Hakol Bukiyin, everybody knows that they were divorced, but not everybody knows that they were remarried, but rather Rav Ashi's reason that there's a possibility of confusing with that case of Yisrael B'chayah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bominid Rava Min Rav Nachman, Sarasa Mavu. So now Rava asked Rav Nachman, fine, so that talks about the girl herself. So she herself, the Chachamim are saying that she can do in the second case of the Mishnah, let's say, where she was a Yisoyma and he remarried her still as a Yisoyma, where her first marriage and her remarriage are both Drabbanon. So we said the Chachamim allow her to do Yibum and Rabbi Elazar does not. And then we have the third case of the Mishnah where we said everybody agrees that she's Osir. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, Sarasa Mahu. What about her tzara? So suppose that the ktana has a so the case like this, where they remarried when she was a gdola. So either the first case of our Mishnah, where she was married as a gdola, divorced as a gdola, remarried as a gdola. So everything is daraisa, or the case that we discussed in the braisa, where she was married as a ktana, divorced as a ktana, remarried as a gdola. Where now this is a marriage which is valid on a daraisa level. So according to Rabbi Lazar, who says that nevertheless in all these cases yibum is also because of gzeira, then what about sarasa mahu? What about if she has a tzara? So Reuven was married to this ktana whom he divorced and then remarried as a gdola, and Rabbi Lazar is still saying that she's also to him. That she's also to Yibum. Now, if Reuven has another wife who was a Gdola the whole time, what about she? Can she do Yibum? Or does she have to do Chalitza? Amalei, said Rav Nachman, answers him, he gufa gzera. Think of it, the whole fact that the girl herself, the Tana herself, can't do Yibum is only based on a gzera. Because we said, because it might be confused, but Yisayim b'chayyab, v'anan nekum v'nigza gzera l'gzera. So you're telling me you're asking whether we should make a gzera on top of a gzera, because if we allow the tzara to do yibum, we might allow her to do yibum. Well, even if she does, that itself is only one. That she herself is only also drabanan. So Rashi says that we mean gzera l'gzera in that sense that we have the gzera because it might be confused with the yisoyim of chayav, and on top of that is a gzera. That the tzara might be confused with her. Tosfos points out that no, that reason about the gzera of Yisoma b'chaya av. If you're looking for the Gemara, it's on the first shelf of Gemara, as you have Yavamah over there. If you say it's Rav Ashi who had pointed out the matter of the gzera is because you might confuse it with Yisoma b'chaya av. Rava himself had given a different reason. So Tosfos says, okay, well, that's what it means. In other words, that the point is, Rava himself had said the point about Hakol B'Kiyin B'Gerushin V'en Hakol B'Kiyin B'Chazara. So it's not really a Gzera per se. Rava, so when we say Gzera L'Gzera, Rav Nachman is using it, says Tosfos, in a slightly looser sense. It's not literally a Gzera that the Chachamim made not to do Yibum because the fact is that not everybody knows that she was remarried, and therefore they're going to mistakenly think that you can do Yibum with a Grusha. So therefore, so now Rav Nachman is saying, based on your reason, Rava, that you're saying not to do Yibum in that case, because people will know that she got divorced. They're not going to know that she got remarried. Well, based on that, according to Rabbi Elazar, that's why Rabbi Elazar would say no Yibum. Well, then, on the other hand, with the case of Tzara, we're not going to extend it that far. We're not going to make Gzera on top of that, on top of that Isur Dirabbanan, and therefore the din would be, so in short, in other words, so if Reuven was married to two wives, and he divorced one of them and remarried her, according to Rabbi Elazar, that one is also to do Yibum. She would have to do Chalitza. The other one is available for either Chalitza or Yibum. So as usual, if the Yavam does Yibum or Chalitza with the other one, with the Tzara, then everybody's taken care of, because once you do Yibum or Chalitza with one woman from one bias, then you're good. If we were to do Chalitza with the one that's also Dirabbanan, then he would still have to go and do Chalitza with the other one as well. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "V'hatanya, but what do you mean? We learn in a brisa, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amru Hi V'tzarasa Chalitzas. We learn in a brisa in the name of Rabbi Elazar that she and her tzara, she meaning the woman who was divorced and remarried, and the tzara have to do chalitza." The Gemara says, "Hi V'tzarasa Sakadaydach." Now, obviously, you can't think that the brisa literally means she and her tzara. There's no reason both of them should need chalitza. The fact is that once the tzara does chalitza, then that covers both of them. Doesn't it mean the Braisa is saying that either she or the Tzara does Chalitza, and that takes care of it? So on the face of it, the Braisa is saying that neither of them can do Yibum. Both of them, one or the other of them, would have to do Chalitza. So that would contradict what Rav Nachman is saying, that the Tzara would, in fact, who was never divorced, would, in fact, be allowed to do Yibum, even according to Rav Elazar. The Gemara says, listen, live terutzi kama tarutzis, as it is, you're having to fix up the wording of the Braisa, because the Braisa, as we have it, was obviously worded wrongly anyway, because you can't say hi v'tzarasa chalatzis. So tritzachi, once you're reworking the Braisa, then you can also just as well say that it means hi chalatzis, that she would have to do chalitza. There's no possibility of yibum for her. But tzarasa o chalatzis, o emis yabemis. But the tzara could do either one, as long as the first one didn't do chalitza, of course, because with her, the whole concern about Yibum would only be because of a Gzera L'Gzera, and we don't do that. So that's how it remains. Even according to Rabbi Elazar, the second one, the Tzara, could in fact do either Chalitza or Yibum, and once she does that, it patters the other one. According to the Chachamim, anyway, we're saying that there's that according to the Chachamim, either one of them would be able to do Yibum, because we're not concerned about this. We're not concerned about this possibility of confusing it with a case where the original marriage was Daraisa and the second one is Dirabbanan. Okay. Mishnah says, Shnei Achen Nisurin L'Shtei Achoyis. If you have two brothers who are married, L'Shtei Achoyis K'tanis. If you have two brothers married to two sisters who are ktanos, and on the side over here it says, it's really supposed to say yesoimus ktanos, not just that they're ktanos, because if they were ktanos who were married off by their fathers, then again, it's both of them are daraisa, so we're not talking about that. The whole point is, we want to have a case where both marriages are only dirabon. Umes baila shel achas mehen, now the brother of one of them dies, so halizu teitz mishum achos isha. What happens is then, that the other one is potter from chalitza or yibum because she's his wife's sister. So in other words, so Reuven and Shimon are married to Rachel and Leah. So now when Reuven dies, Shimon is still married to Leah, So now he's unable to do Yibum or Chalitza. He's unable to do Yibum with Rachel because she's his wife's sister. And as long as his wife is alive, she's an heir to him. And therefore, no Chalitza is necessary. Same as at the beginning of the Masechta, Chamesh Esun Nashim Poitras Tzoriseh. So she herself and any of her Tzoris would be potter from Chalitza or Yibum. V'chein Shtei Chershes, G'dolo K'tana. Similarly, if the two wives were Chershes, a cheresh is a deaf mute. We're going to learn about them in great detail in the next parak, where a cheresh, they don't have das, so therefore they can't do a marriage on a daraisa level. So you have the same kind of thing. Even if one of them is a gdola and one of them is a ktana, so mes baila shok ktana, if the husband of the ktana, if the husband of the Tana passed away, then the same thing, Tana is potter from Chalitza or Yibum because Achos Isha, because after all her, because the again, she's his wife's sister. Now, the reason why we're mentioning Tana and Gdola is because we have the other way around. Mes Baila Shel Gdola. What happens if the husband of the Gdola passes away? Now, the problem is that first of all, Agoris HaGura takes out this whole section of the Mishnah because he says the dinim of a cheresh and cheresh we're going to learn in the next parak. It doesn't really belong in this Mishnah, he says. But we have it in front of us, so we'll learn it. Anyway, the problem is like this. When it comes to a cheresh, the ketana's marriage exists only d'rabbanan. The gdola's marriage, even though she's a cheresh, exists on a d'oraisa level. So one of them is Gdola, one of them is a Ktana. So if the Ktana's husband dies, no problem. The Ktana herself, her marriage is only Drabbanon. So therefore she's potter from Chalitza or Yibum because her sister is still alive and she's married to the other brother. But Mes Baila Shel Gdola, what happens if the husband of the Gdola passes away? So now the Gdola has a Zika in Atoda. The Ktana is now going to be also to her husband because she's a chos zikukasa. She's the wife, she's the sister of a woman who is zakuk to him. So what do we do? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Lazar, it says on the side, Melamdin is a Ktana shetamayinba. So Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar says, what we do is we tell the Ktana to do miyun. Now that accomplishes that then it's considered she was never married in the first place. Well, now we can do yibum with her sister. So this way, in other words, even though, as the Gemara is going to say, normally we shouldn't do miyun, we shouldn't get involved in case of miyun, but in this case, it makes it possible to do the mitzvah of yibum, which otherwise would have been impossible.
But if the whole reason of the takanas hacham is that a girl shouldn't be on the streets, mm-hmm. so by taking her off miyun, says she's back to that problem. Why the Rabbanan?
Somebody else can still marry her. I mean, just because she did miyun against one husband doesn't mean she's going to be on the streets. She'll find another husband who's willing to marry her.
Okay.
But in this case, anyway, the point is we're doing it. It's true. Usually we don't want miyun, but in this case we're doing it in order to make it possible to do the mitzvah of yibum. So therefore we allow it.
Say the case again.
The case is that you have Reuven and Shimon are married to two sisters. Two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, are married to two sisters, Rachel and Leah. Both of them are cherishes. One's a gdola, one's a ktana. Now, the gdola's marriage exists on a daraisa level. The ktana's does not. So now if the ktana's husband dies, then what happens to the gdola? If the ktana's husband dies, so now Shimon is already married to the ktana. Now you have the gdola is up for yibum to him. The problem is that she's his wife's sister. That would prevent yibum from happening. But since he's married to the Ktana, only did Rabbanon, so we have a way around it, says Rabbi Lazar, have her do miyun, and then it's as if they were never married, and then there's no problem.
Wait, he's not marrying two sisters.
Then he would be marrying two sisters. The Rachel and Leah are two sisters. If he were to stay married to Rachel the Ktana, and he's also now going to do yibum with Leah the Gdola, then he's married to two sisters. Sure.
So Rachel does
miyun. So instead, Rachel does miyun. Now remember that miyun, we said before in the parak, makes it, unlike Gerushin, which makes it that there still was a relationship and now it's been broken off, Miyun makes it as though there was never a relationship in the first place. Therefore, he was never married to Rachel. Therefore, it's good. Now he can marry Leah. Rav Gamliel says you don't have to do that.
Why is it so important that Leah gets married? I mean, Rachel's already married.
Because Leah, there's a mitzvah of Yibum. Basileia's husband.
She can't get married until she does yibum.
Yeah, that's,
she can't do chalitza.
She could do chalitza if she wanted to do chalitza, then fine. But the Gemara is going to say that mitzvah yibum. After all, we learned before mitzvah yibum kodemus. So yeah. Anyway, so that's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabban Gamliel Omer, im miyano miyano. Rabban Gamliel says, no, you don't need that. If she does miyun, then fine, you're right, that does take care of the situation. V'im lav, tamten at shetagdil. If not, then let's just wait until Rachel grows up, until she becomes a gdola. V'teitza alizum, v'shma chos isha. And then at that point, Leah becomes potter from Yibum or from Chalitza, because she's a chos ishtoi, where Rachel is now married to her husband on the daraisa. Meaning,
for some, she couldn't get married to anyone.
So right now, she'll be stuck for a while until Rachel. So if Rachel chooses to do miyun, fine. But Rabban Gamliel says that we don't instruct her to do that
because they're sisters.
She could do chalitza if she wanted, but
not. But she has to wait.
So Rabban Gamliel is saying that if you want to do yibum, chalitza.
But she can't do yibum because
she can't do yibum exactly because it's her brother because her sister is married to him. That's the point.
Yeah. But I think that.
Rav Gamliel holds, Rashi explains, we learned earlier in the Masechta that Rav Gamliel holds ein zika, meaning that zika is not a strong thing. So Rav Gamliel also says, we learned earlier in the Masechta, mutu levatul mitzvah yibum, and you're in fact allowed to actually do something to prevent the mitzvah of yibum from taking place. So over here, we're not even doing anything, we're just waiting. So Rav Gamliel says, if we said yesh zika, then we would say we have to take care of the zika as soon as possible. But because he holds ein zika, that zika is not such a strong thing, therefore, it doesn't matter if we have to wait a while in order for the zika to be undone by the fact that now Rochel becomes a gdola, then good, we'll do that. We have no problem. We have no problem having the zika broken by Rochel growing up. So no need to have her do. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says a third opinion. No, what happens is poor guy, Eloy al Ishta, Eloy al Eish Asachiv, poor guy, he ends up losing both of them. Moitzias Ishta beget the Eish Asachiv b'chalitza. We don't tell her to do miyun for the reasons that we're going to learn in the Gemara, that you're not supposed to get involved with miyun if at all possible. So therefore, he says yesh zika, so therefore we can't allow Rachel to remain married to him, because after all, she is a chos zikukasei. Therefore, the result is he's going to have to divorce Rachel the Kana, and that still doesn't allow him to do yibum with the Gdola, because after all, then she's the sister of his, then she's still the sister of his Grusha, who would also still be also to him. So therefore, the result is he's going to have to do chalitz with her. So he ends up losing both of them. He ends up losing his wife, the Ketana, whom he has to give a get, and he ends up losing the other, the Yavama, the Gdola, where he can't do Yibum with her, he has to give her chalitza. So three different opinions. Okay. So the Gemara asks, in the first, according to Rabbi Lozer, that Melamdin is a Ketana Shetamayinbo, that we instruct the Ketana to do Miyun. The question is, Mishori, is that even allowed to instruct a Ketana to do Miyun? If she does it on her own is one thing, but not to tell her to. A person should always try to get close to get involved with three things, and there are three other things that a person should try to stay away from as much as possible. Yidbak b'shloshet varim, three things to connect to try and make an effort to do, is b'chalitza uva'avaras shalom uva'afaras nedarim, to arrange for chalitza, to bring peace between people, and to cancel nedarim, to revoke nedarim of his wife or his daughter or whatever. The israchet mishloshet varim, and a person should stay away as much as possible from three things: mina miyun, from getting involved with miyun, or mina pikdonis, and from accepting the pikdon. We're going to explain in the Gemara soon why some of these things are good and some of them are not good, and what situations we're talking about, or mina ervonis, and from being an orev for a loan. So we see that you should stay away from miyun as much as possible. How are we saying that we should instruct the girl to do miyun according to Rabbi Lazar? And the answer is miyun to mitzvah shiny. It's different. In this case, we're telling her to do miyun in order to make it possible to do the mitzvah of yibum. Then Bakapara's rule about staying away from miyun wouldn't apply. Maushab points out, by the way, that the point with all these six things, well, I mean, we're going to go through them in detail in the Gemara, but the point is with each one of them, was saying the first three, that Yidbak, B'Shlosh, Advarim, you could argue with each one of them. On the other hand, maybe there'd be a reason to say not. Maybe, for example, for Chalitza. After all, sometimes, let's start going through them, actually, and then we'll clarify what Marashah says. So Gufa, getting back to, we said, Tony Bakapara, La'olam Yidbak, Adam, B'Shlosh, Advarim. So now, what are the three things that he says that Yidbak? The first one is, B'Chalitza, Ka'aba Shol. The first one is that it's good to get involved with Chalitza. And the reason is, like Abba Shoal's opinion earlier in the Masechta, the Tanya, Abba Shoal, I'm a Konis, as Yivimta, the Shem Noi. He says that if you marry a Yavama because she's beautiful, or Lashem Ishus, or because you want to be married, you're tired of being a Bacher, or Lashem Dava Acher, for any other reason other than purely for the mitzvah, Ke'ilu Pagea Be'erva, and then it's as if he's encountering an erva, because after all, by rights, he would have been also tame as an erva. It's only the Torah gives a specific heter for when it's in the case of a yibum, but he says, therefore, it has to be purely for the sake of yibum. The korabain, alias of Vlad Mamzer, the child, says Abba Shoal, I would consider if he does do yibum for an improper reason, then the child from it is almost a mamzer. He would agree, it's not literally a mamzer, but nevertheless, it's almost like one. Because he shouldn't have married her when it's not completely the Shem Shemayim. So therefore, according to Abba Shoal, then it's better to get involved with Chalitza than with Yibum. So therefore, that's what we're saying. And in fact, we know that nowadays we have the machloikas comes down all the way to now between the Mechaber and the Ramah, and therefore you end up with a difference in minhag between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, whether we always do Chalitza and never Yibum, or whether sometimes Yibum is done, because there's the halacha like Abba Shoal or like the Chacham. So Marashah points out Sfaradim sometimes do Yibum, yeah. Practically speaking, it doesn't happen that often, especially because they can't have two wives, but I mean they could in the sense that they never accepted Cherem Der Ben Gershom, but still the laws of the various countries where most Jews live now don't allow for the Ksuba. Well, yeah, you do have actually Sfaradish Ksubas often have a clause where the husband pledges that he's not going to marry another wife without the consent of his first wife. Whether that applies if he has to do Yibum, in fact, gets to be a Machloikas itself among the poskim, whether that's meant to be included or not. Anyway, now Marashah makes a point that all of these things that we're going to list here, the ones that a person should be Yadabik in them, and the ones that a person should be Yisrachik in them, the Chiddush is with each one of them, you could argue on the contrary, though there's a reason to say the opposite. For example, as far as Chalitza, sure, many people who might do Yibum would be doing it Shalom L'Shem Shemayim, and therefore you have Abba Shoal's rule. On the other hand, is it not possible that sometimes you have people who would be doing it L'Shem Shemayim, and still we're saying that Yidbak B'Chalitza, that it's still preferable, even in such cases, do Chalitza, because Allah Roiv, for the most part, people's motivations are not so tahor, and therefore, according to Abba Shoal, Chalitza is better. And the same thing with each of these other things. You can find, he says, for each one of them, you can find a miut where the opposite would be the case, a miut of cases where Chalitza is not the best option, a miut of cases where Havas Shalom is not the best option, and so forth. Nevertheless, on the whole, that's the best option, and that's why Yidbak in those. And the same thing with the other group. On the whole, miut is not a good thing. Sometimes you can have, like in our Mishnah, where we're saying there's an exception. But generally speaking, Allah Roiv, it's not. And that's what he means, that Yisrachet. So he continues. Havas Shalom, where do we see that Havas Shalom is something to try and get as close as possible? Yichtiv Bakesh Shalom B'Radfehu. The Pasuk says, seek peace and pursue it. V'omer Ababahu, ask you to differ to differ. And we learn by Exeter Shabbat, the reward that a person gets for pursuing peace. Where we say every morning in davening, Havas Shalom Shabbat Machaber is one of the things that Oichel Peres Sein Ba'olam Azev Akeren Kemes Alam Abba. Where do we get that from? Because it's like Gemilas Chasadim. Ksiv Hacha Bakesh Shalom V'Rod Fehu Ochtiv Asim Roidif Tzedakah V'Chesed Yim Tzachayim Tzedakah V'Chaber. A person who pursues Tzedakah and Chesed, meaning who gives Tzedakah and Gemilas Chasadim, will find as his reward life and Tzedakah and honor. So therefore, we see that Bakesh Shalom V'Rod Fehu has the same kind of thing, where it brings that Oichel Peres Sein Ba'olam Hazeh Ba'akeren Kemes Le'olam Haba. Marashah points out that to, what do we need that for? I mean, just saying Bacchus Shalom Radveo itself would tell us that you have to pursue trying to make peace between people. No. And he says, no, if it weren't for Rabbi Bohu's statement, you would mistakenly think it means like this: Bacchus Shalom, try to seek peace. But if for whatever reason it's not possible to make peace, Radveo, then go pursue the guy and then go habolahog hashkin bahargo. So therefore, it wouldn't show that there's an Indian to try and make peace whenever possible. Therefore, we need Rav Abahu's statement to say that no, Virat Fehu means pursue peace, not pursue the other guy. So again, the point is that Maharshal is saying it's not 100% of the time. There are going to be the rare times when it's impossible to make shalom with the person because he is in fact bolahor, right? And then you have no choice. But we're saying, in general, 99% of the time, it's going to be the case that shalom is the better alternative, and therefore you should do that. Next, Baforest Nadarim. Why should a person go and try to get involved in a forest Nadarim? That would be like what Rav Nosson says. When a person makes a neder, it's as if he built a bomber at a time when bombers are also, where then he's doing an aveira by it. We actually just had in the Ein Yaakov shiur here in the afternoon, we just came across this point also at the beginning of Cholin. So if a person makes a neder, it's as if he built a bomber because he's doing an isur. Just the fact that he's making a neder is considered an isur. Tosfos brings that actually you have another pasuk that says v'chisech dal linder, if you hold yourself back from making a neder, lo yeh b'chachet, and there won't be an avera in you, implying, but if you make a neder, then you're closer to a chet, because you might be over on the neder. And then you have a different pasuk that says chidul lachem min ha'adam asher neshama ba'apoy, ki b'meh nechshavu, stay away. The Gemara says you're not supposed to greet somebody before you daven. And because there's kibba meh nechshavu, because what is he counting? I'll take you by meh el abama. So we see that there's a certain association between the shorash chodal and abama. Anyway, then Tosfos brings from another Gemara that brings other psukim in that regard. So a person makes a neder as if he builds a bama. The Ran on Nedarim brings a point on this Gemara in Nedarim. Says, why are we comparing a dafka to building a bummer? He says, because what happens? A person builds a bummer at a time when bummer so also, he mistakenly thinks that he's doing a mitzvah. Look at that, I'm bringing a korban to Hashem. But he doesn't realize that he's doing a serious aveira. The same way over here, a person is assuring something on himself, that an object that was mutter, and he's making an osir to himself. He thinks he's doing a great thing, but really not. And he continues, if he fulfills the neder, rather than going and being matur neder, kilu hikru v'alei korban, this is if he brought a korban on that bummer. So now he's over on two aveiros. The better thing is for him to go and be matur neder. Now, you have certain exceptional tzaddikim where it's the other way around, where once they make a neder, in particular tzaddikim, to begin with, don't make a neder stam. When they make a neder or shvua, they're doing it for a purpose, and then it's actually a good thing for them to be makayim it and not to be matur neder. You have a gemara, you have a story in Ksubas, which we'll get to in a few months, Bez Hashem, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is able to go into Gan Eden alive, because he swears to Malach HaMavis that I got into Gan Eden, I'm not getting out of here. And they said, and based in Shamaila, okay, if he never was matir a shvua that he made, then we're going to allow him to keep this one as well. So we see that it's a good thing for to keep a shvua. But there's also a difference in that regard between a neder and a shvua. A shvua, one of the major differences is that a shvua is you saying, I will or I won't do such and such. So therefore, fine, a person does that in order to motivate themselves to do what they're supposed to, or to stay away from what they're not supposed to. Nishba l'kayim as a mitzvah, for example, as opposed to a neder, as opposed to saying this object is also to me. So what are you doing that for? So neder is not such a good thing. And if a person made a neder, better he should be matur neder, as opposed to a shvua, then if he keeps the shvua is a good thing. So therefore, that's what we're saying over here, that Yisrach Adam, that's what we're saying, that Yidbak Adam, that a person should come close to Afaras Nedarim. Again, Maharshal says, the point is that you will have occasions when it's the exception, but generally speaking, a neder is not a good thing, and it's a good thing to be involved in being made for it. Next, we said, Rabbi Kapara had said, Yisrachet Meshloish Adbarim, that he should stay away from three things, Mina Mi'unin, the first one was Mi'un, and why, what's wrong with Mi'un? Because when the girl gets older, she may regret what she did. She may have said, you know what, I shouldn't have done that meal. And then, I'm like this, now she's gone from her husband, so therefore we shouldn't get involved with that. Mina pikdonis. What do we mean that you should stay away from pikdon? Means babar mosa. Means when you have somebody who lives in the same city as you. So what if a person lives in a different city and he wants to give you a pikdon, by all means, take it. But if he lives in the same city as you, then don't, says Bakapara. Debaise ki baise dummy, because his house is like your house. Meaning, Rashi says, this person is, because he lives in the same city as you, he's regularly going to visit your house. So what's going to happen? At one point, he might pick up his pikdon. Then later on, he'll claim that that I never picked it up and you still owe it to me. And there won't necessarily be Edim or anything, and you're going to get yourself into all kinds of problems. In the case of our Mishnah, yeah, that's what the Gemara said, mitzvah shiny. It's different when you have a case of miyun that's being done in order to enable a mitzvah. We said that. That's why Rabbi Lazar says in the Mishnah that we should teach her to do miyun. But ordinarily, we would follow Bakapara's advice and say that miyun is not a good thing to get involved with. Yeah. So now, as far as the pikdon, so again, Rashi says the vote is that it's practical advice, because the person is going to end up visiting your house. At some point, he may pick up his pikdon. Then later on, he'll go and be saying, you know what, you never gave me my pikdon. Where is it? And you're not going to have edim that you gave it back to him or whatever. Marsha learns differently. Marsha says that that's a bit of a doicha. He says, no, what it means is if the guy lives in the same town as you, so why is your house any better of a place for a pikdon than his? Let him just keep it in his house. Mashenkin, if he's from out of town, okay, you understand why he needs to keep it as a pikdon by you, because he can't travel back and forth to his hometown all the time. And Minha Oirovin, when we're saying that a person should stay away from being an Oriv, that means specifically Ba'arve Shel Tzion. Specifically, that refers to the kind of Oriv of Shel Tzion. So what is Sheltzi? And Rashi says the first explanation is it means the name of a place. Now, the rule is like this. When you become an Oriv for somebody's loan, so Reuven is borrowing money from Shimon and Levi is the Oriv. Usually, the rule is, the rule in Halacha is that that Shimon cannot demand the payment from Levi first. He has to first go to Reuven to demand the payment. Only if Reuven defaults and doesn't pay, then Shimon has the right to go to Levi. Now, in Shel Tzion, or maybe it just means Tzion itself, as in Yerushalayim, they didn't have that. The local minhag was that they would go after the Orev first. So therefore, you're better off not being an Orev in such a place, because then you're on the hook for somebody else's loan, even though that person could perfectly well pay it off. That's Rashi's first explanation. The second explanation is that Shel Tzion is short for the word Shloith Dutz, which the Gemara is going to quote in a couple of lines. Literally, Shloith Dutz means pull out and stick in. But it means the same kind of thing. It means an Oriv, where instead of the usual kind of Oriv who is only the last resort, instead you have here the Oriv, like the loan is almost like pulled out of Reuven and stuck into Levi, because Levi is on the hook for Reuven's loan, even though Reuven is capable of paying it off. So therefore, that's the kind of Oriv that you don't want to be, says Bar Kappara. And the Gemara says, "De'omer of Yitzchok," as in fact Rabbi Yitzchok says, "My dichtiv ye'roya ki orav zor." A pasuk in Mishlei says, "Bad, there will be bad because he orav to a because he orav a stranger." And the next words of the pasuk, which the Gemara is not quoting over here, is "V'sone soikim b'teach." One who hates toikim will be secure. So, what is orav zor and what is toikim? So it means raw achar, the word ra yeroya, bad upon bad, means raw acharaba tovoy, the bad upon bad, will bad one bad thing after another, will come lemakabla gavim, to people who accept gavim. Now, Tosfos says that doesn't mean you have a sincerely motivated gair. Of course you should accept him. What we mean is, in other words, where, for example, where people convince a person to become a gair, where you're not supposed to, you're supposed to dissuade him, or where they accept him right away without looking too much into their motives. So then the Pasuk is warning us that one bad thing after another will come to such people. Ula Arvish Sheltzion, and to an Ariv of Sheltzion, we just said, where he takes over the responsibility to begin with, rather than only being the last resort. Ula Tekeya Atzma, the Dvan Halacha, and to a person who sticks himself into a matter of Halacha, which we're going to see soon in the Gemara what that means. The point is, in other words, Orav Zor has a double meaning. Orav Meloshin Orev, so he's an Orev to a stranger, so he gets himself into a lot of trouble. Orav also Meloshin mixing, he mixes in Zori, mixes in foreigners into the Jewish people by accepting Gerim inappropriately. And Toikim of the second half of the pasuk, the son is Soikim by Teach, one who hates Toikim will be at ease, implying that if he does get involved in Toikim, then he won't be at ease. And what is Toikim? Is Toikat is to Keatzma, Ludvan Halacha, as the Gemara is going to explain in a minute. Yeah. So Makabla Gerim, the reason why the Makabla Gerim are bad is Kirab Chelba, is based on what Rab Chelba said. Do Amr Rab Chelba, Koshim Gerim Yisrael, Kasapachas Ba'ur. Gerim are as difficult for the Jewish people as Tzara, as Sapachas, which is a type of Tzaras on the skin. We learned that earlier in Masechta, and there's a number of different explanations that Rashi and Tosfos and other Mephoshim give that. Why that is. Yeah, we learned it in different places in Shas, yeah. That's right. We learned it. Yeah, that's true. So there's a number of reasons because it can be because Hashem rests Shechina on the Jewish people only when they're miyuchosim, and Gerim lack that kind of yichus because Gerim are not necessarily so careful with details of mitzvahs, and therefore born Jews learn from them. Tosfos brings from Rav Avraham Agerim the other way around, that Gerim are extra careful with mitzvahs, so they make born Jews look bad, and then there's different other reasons. Anyway. So it's not so good to just be accepting Gerim willy-nilly. Arve Shaltzion, and when it comes to an Orev, we said it's an Orev Shaltzion, the Avi Shluf Dutz, where we just said they pull it out of Reuven and stick it into Levi. So Levi is on the hook for a debt that he didn't even borrow the money, and even though Reuven is capable of paying off. So the Pasuk is warning us against that. And what is Tekeya Atzma, the Dvar Halacha? What's the third one of a person who sticks himself into a matter of Halacha means to Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Yomer. Basically what it means is a person is learning Torah and a person is saying, I'm learning Torah, but I'm not going to be Makayim Mitzvahs. So the Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Yomer, Kola Oimer Ein Loi Torah, Ein Loi Torah. A person says, I don't have Torah. Okay, so he has no Torah. Well, that's obvious. What is Rabbi Yossi telling us? Ella, what he means is Kola Oimer Ein Loi Ella Torah, Ein loy ela Torah. No, he says, I only have Torah. I don't bother with mitzvahs. So the first version would be if he says, Ein loy Torah, I'm not oisik in Torah, then he doesn't have the schar for learning. The second version we're saying is that he says, if he says, Ein loy ela Torah, that all I have is Torah, so Ein loy ela Torah, then he only has the schar for learning Torah. He says, Hanami pshita. Well, again, obviously, he doesn't do mitzvahs. Why would he get a schar for that? Ella, no, da'afilu Torah ein loy. This is the famous expression. They always say, kol ha'ima ein loy ela Torah. Afilu Torah ein loy comes from this Gemara. So he doesn't even get the schar for learning Torah. My timer, now why is that? Omar ha'papa, omar kura, ulamadtem va'asisem. Because you have a pasuk that says you should learn Torah and you should do it. Implying, kol sheyeshne va'asiya yeshne v'lamida, a person who is involved in doing mitzvahs, so then he has the schar for the Torah that he learned. Kosha, ain't it basia, ain't it blamida. But if he doesn't do the mitzvahs, then he doesn't get a schar for his learning Torah either. The Alter Rebbe explains in Lakota Torah near the beginning that what it means is, so you have, as the Gemara mentions in many places, you need Torah ugmilas chasadim, and he explains, first of all, gmilas chasadim means obviously the regular, what we think of as gmilas chasadim, but it also includes, we say in Eilu Dvarim in the morning, among the things that have that Odom Oichel Peresem Ba'olam Azeh, Ba'akeren Kem Salam Abba, one of them is Iyun Tefillah. And Rashi explains in Shabbos, which is where that Braisa comes from, that Iyun Tefillah is a subset of Gmilas Chasadim. So because he's being Gomel Chesed to himself, basically. So therefore, so the Alter Rebbe explains there in the Kutta Torah and Parshas Vayikra, that when we say that a person needs Torah or Gmilas Chasadim, it also includes that the person needs to have Torah and Avoda and Davin. So if he just learns Torah without Avoda and Davening and without Gmilas Chasadim, then we're saying in the Gemara over here, it's not worth much. But if he, you have to have Torah Gmilas Chasadim, meaning Torah together with the Avodah of Tefillah, and aside, you also have to have. He says you have to have the simple meaning of Gmilas Chasadim that you do Chesed for another year. So the Gemara continues. So that's what it means to Kaya Atzma, the Bar Halacha. Like he sticks himself into saying, all I need to do is learn the Halachas. I don't actually need to observe them. So then we're saying that Ra Acha Ra is going to come to such a person.
Not doing
chesed,
also not doing mitzvahs.
Right, that's what we mean. In other words, so he's not, right.
If you're not doing chesed, you're not doing mitzvahs, but you could be doing the mitzvahs.
Well, so that's what we're saying. In other words, that gemilas chasad, the expression all over Shas, is they need Torah gemilas chasadim, and so the Alter Rebbe explains that gemilas chasadim has two aspects. Number one, it means doing actual chesed, and number two, it means iyun tefila. Yeah.
But not putting
out
the tefillin, that's also...
Well, I mean, in some way, I guess that way he's doing a chesed for himself and for the rest of the Jewish people as well, because Koy Sol Arim Zal Azeh. But yeah, we're talking primarily, what we're saying over here in the Gemara, we're talking more generally about he learns Torah, but doesn't do mitzvahs at all. So the Gemara continues, actually, we could still stick with one of the original versions of Rabbi Yossi's statement, where we're saying that if he says, I have only Torah, then he has only Torah, meaning the schar of Torah, and you're asking, isn't that poshut? It means, what if he teaches other people Torah? So he himself doesn't observe mitzvahs or doesn't take the time to do mitzvahs, but he teaches other people and other people go and do mitzvahs. You would think that he gets reward for the mitzvahs because he's the one who made them happen because he taught the other people. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi is telling us that not. It's not enough to motivate other people to do mitzvahs. You yourself have to do them as well. Okay, the boy same, another possible. The person who makes people do aver is a mesis or madiach. So here it's like a mesis and the. Well, usually that word hasasa usually means for negative. There's a gemara in Menachas, actually, we just learned it the other day in Ein Yaakov, that says that usually the word hasasa usually means you're convincing somebody to do something that's bad for them. We find that the word hasasa used about Hashem convincing us to learn Torah, which is good for us. But yeah. So over here, you have a person is teaching other people about mitzvahs and helping them become shomer tzedek mitzvahs, but he himself isn't doing it himself. So we're saying he doesn't get the schar for their mitzvahs. That's the keatzim of the bar halacha. The boy same, another possibility to keatzim of the bar halacha is not talking about that, but rather something else. When a dayan has a din torah come in front of him, the gomer halacha, now he knows a halacha that is similar to this case but not identical, umedami milsa la milsa, so he compares one matter to another to arrive at what the halacha should be, the islay rabba v'loy ozo mashal, but he's what he should have asked his rabbi. He has a rebbe whom he didn't go and ask. He should have checked with his rebbe whether the analogy that he's making is correct, and he didn't do that. That's what we're calling tekei atzmi l'dvar halacha.
So you never know whether
your inference is correct. There can be a tiny difference between cases, which makes the din is different. Min akaltze al akaltze. Yeah. The Amr of Shmuel Manachmeni, Amr of Yonason, lo olam yira dayan atzma kilo cherev munachas leben yurei chosav. A dayan should always picture himself as though there's a sword between his thighs. That in other words, he's in terrible danger if he makes one wrong step. The Gehenim sucha let me talk to him, and as if Gehenim is opened up underneath him.
We had
it here and there. Yeah. Shenema hini mitose shelo shloime, as the pasuk says. Shenema hini mitose shelo shloime. Behold the bed of Shloime, and Shloime in Shir Hashirim generally refers to Hashem. Giborim means dayonim, so they're surrounding the bed of Hashem. Shishim giborim savivla. Specifically, Rashi says mitose means the lishkas agazis in the Beis Hamikdash. Shishim giborim savivla. There are 60 mighty men around it. Migibori Yisrael, from among the powerful people of the Jewish people. So it means the Sanhedrin. And the pasuk continues, mipachad balaylas, that they have those swords because of fear in the night, meaning mipachad shel gehenim shedoyim lalayla. Since the pasuk says charbay al yurechay, his sword on his thigh, which means therefore we're darshaning that as if the sword is between his thighs, where he's gonna get cut up if he makes any misstep. And mipachad balaylas means mipachad shel gehenim shedoyim lalayla, out of fear of gehenim, where gehenim is compared to night. So therefore we see that the dayan has to always have that mentality. So Rashi explains that the Shishim Giborim mean the members of the Sanhedrin and the Lushkas Agazis. Tosfos asks, what do you mean? There are 70 members of the Sanhedrin, not 60. So therefore, Tosfos says that it actually hints at the 60 times 10,000 Jews, 600,000 Jews, when they left Mitzrayim, Shishim Riboy, so therefore the 60 Gibori Yisrael represent that. Different Achronim talk about possibilities over here that maybe there was 60 main members of the Sanhedrin and 10 sort of like 10 auxiliary, 10 junior members. Well, the Orach HaNer talks about that the 60 represents when you have the 24 Mishmaris of Kohenim, 24 Mishmaris of Levim, and 12 Shvatim. And if you have one of each of them in the Sanhedrin, then there is the 60. And then, yeah, because you need 70, then you need another 10 to fill it out. But therefore, we can refer to it metaphorically as 60. Tosfos, by the way, as far as the previous part where we said that if a person motivates other people to do mitzvahs, he doesn't get a schar for their mitzvahs. Tosfos says, if he doesn't do them himself, Tosfos says, what do you mean? Don't we have the Gemara that says elsewhere, call him Zakeh Sarabim, Ein Chet Ba'al Yodin? Because it wouldn't be right. The Talmud is in Gan Eden, and then the Rebbe is in Gehenna. So Tosfos says, because there's a difference, was he good to begin with before he taught other people? Then that's different. Ein Chet Ba'al Yodin. Here we're talking about he was bad before he started teaching them. So then we're saying this is what we're talking about over here, where then he himself is not doing mitzvahs and he doesn't get a schar for the mitzvahs that he motivated them to do. But if to begin with he was good when he taught them, then sure, we can then sure, in Chet Ba'al Yodah, then the Eibishter gives him special siyata d'shmaya to not fall into Averis B'chlal and to keep on doing mitzvahs. And then of course he gets a schar for his own mitzvahs as well as for the ones that he taught other people to do.
I ever told someone once to go put on tilling people, the second a Jew,
mm-hmm.
and then he said afterwards that they're gonna ask you if you put on tilling,
mm-hmm.
you should also do it first.
So that works also. So that's another way. If a person is motivated by helping other people do mitzvahs, he himself is gonna be motivated to do those mitzvahs, then yeah, of course, then then he gets the schar, then he gets the schar for that as well. Yeah. Good. Okay. Everyone.